This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, thanks for being here this afternoon. We're going to talk about the issue of camping and overnight sleeping regulations with the City of Roseburg and City Manager Nikki Messenger and Police Chief Gary Klopfenstein. Thanks for coming in.
Good afternoon.
Thank you.
Well, obviously, this has been one of the bigger issues, not just from Roseburg, not just in Oregon, but all over the country in the last few years in particular. And it's taken up a lot of your time.
Yeah, as I said last time, we've dedicated an entire officer to this program, trying to do cleanups and to enforce and kind of keep the camps from blowing up to what they were during the COVID era. So it's been a resource.
Even to the point where I saw not that long ago, you got a pickup to better deal with the situation versus the SUVs.
Yeah, we had to have a pickup to pull trailers and to collect the vast amount of items of utility we have to bring back and book, and it's been very useful.
Nikki, what about from the overall city perspective, what kinds of issues have you dealt with in this area the last couple of years?
So it's been a big impact to our citizens. Obviously, it impacts our parks and public spaces. Organizationally, it impacts almost every department. When we talk about the police department, that's an obvious one. The community development department does, that's where the compliance officer lives. He has a lot of the involvement with the work crew and some of those activities. And then, of course, Public Works is where our parks crew lives, and they're impacted daily by people living in their spaces.
So talk about what led to the new regulations for sleeping overnight on city property.
So it's really kind of a long history, but those states like us, like Oregon, that are located in the Ninth Circuit of the federal court system are impacted by a couple of decisions, one of them called Martin v. Boise and one that's called Blake v. Grants Pass, that changed some things. The Boise decision made it so that you couldn't criminalize people that were sleeping outside if they had no other place to be, if they didn't have a shelter that was low barrier that they could go to. And then the Grants Pass decision took it a little bit further on allowing people to have elements to protect themselves from the weather. So in 2021, the state of Oregon, the legislature codified both those decisions, so they made them law in Oregon. So even if the court makes changes at this point, we're living with legislation that was passed by the Oregon State Legislature. And part of that in 2021 was that any cities that were regulating the acts of sitting, sleeping, lying, or keeping warm and dry outside on public property, any cities and counties that regulate that had to come up with new objectively reasonable ordinances by July 1st of 2023. So that's why you're hearing about it all over the state, that cities and or counties were updating their ordinances, trying to figure out what objectively reasonable means and what was allowed to be regulated and what wasn't, because it's been a landscape that's been changing with each decision, with each lawsuit, with each situation. And of course, each community is different in how they're impacted and what their citizens expect as far as how those things are going to be negotiated.
So give us a kind of a quick look at what the process was to develop the rules, the new regulations for Roseburg.
So a significant amount of staff time just researching what the legislation said, what the court decisions, reading the appeals, reading the decisions of those appeals, so we could understand the outline, the underlying concepts. And then one of the first major steps we took was publishing a public survey to gather input from the public and what their expectations on what this might look like was. And that was out and ended on March 10th. We had just under 5,400 people participate. So for us, that is a lot of people participating. This is something people care about and wanted to make their opinions known. From there, we started working with the Homeless Commission at their March meeting to draft some concepts, or brought them some concepts for their and got their input. which was a public meeting, brought them the original draft, went to a council work study session April 17th, back to the Homeless Commission April 24th, and then we posted on the website the draft ordinance May 1st. Council held their first kind of public hearing about that May 8th, took in a bunch of public comment, made some changes, and adopted or had first reading. We incorporated those changes, and they did second reading May 22nd, and they became effective July 1st. So just the tail end, I'll call it, of the process after staff had done an immense amount of research and working with the city attorney, League of Oregon Cities, and others, started in early May.
So a lot of times when big changes are made, you want to let the people impacted know about it. Chief, what was done to let the unhoused know that changes were coming? What was the process to explain what was ahead?
So our homeless liaison officer for months, even back in March when this first started, we've been keeping him in the loop of what's coming down the pipe. And he has been sharing that with virtually every encounter. They hand out resource cards with different resources, and during those interactions when he's doing that, he's telling people, hey, this is coming. We're going to be regulating camping, or you can't camp, but you're going to be regulating sleeping with restrictions. So it's coming, it's likely to come July 1st. And he just kind of increased the frequency of those conversations as it got closer.
What kind of response did he get?
I asked him specifically that, and he said he was getting a surprising response. He was getting, yeah, we know it's coming. Yeah, we heard. We know it's coming. So that's what he's been hearing. And they know it's coming. And when they're getting cited for 20, 30 yards of trash that's surrounding their camp, they know it's wrong. They know it's wrong. They're just not willing to clean it up. And so it's not like this is a surprise for most of them.
So talk about specifics, Nikki, on these new rules. I know there's online maps. It gets a little complex, given a lot of factors like nearby creeks or the river, things like that.
Yeah, so there's it is a little bit complex. There's three kind of different things that work together. It's, you know, and they're commonly referred to as time, place, and manner. And so the council made the choice when regulating time that sleeping and having your tent and things set up is prohibited after 8 a.m. in the morning. What time it starts being prohibited, there's three different seasons that are identified based on, of course, here, sunset and things like that. So we tried to capture that so that people weren't forced to be, if we just set a straight 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. is when it wasn't prohibited, then it gets dark at 5 in the winter. So we were trying to adjust for that. For the place, we have a pretty healthy list of places that are restricted. A lot of that's based on the public survey and where we saw impacts from damage. And also from the public input at the council meeting, there was a big push that we needed to have a restriction, kind of a boundary around playgrounds, around sports fields, things of that nature. And so that increased some of the area that was prohibited. And then the manner is really, hey, this is while you're sleeping, keeping warm and dry, that it has to be within a, you know, 10 by 10 area, 100 square feet, with the exception of if there's mobility device involved, that can be outside the tent. So those things that the public sees where there's just a lot of stuff accumulating, that isn't allowed. Stuff's inside the tent. The tents are taken down daily. Stuff's packed up. It's a public space. They can be there. They can't be there with a tent set up and all of their stuff spread out. And so that's what we're trying to do, is balance that need to stay warm and dry and sleep. Everybody needs to sleep with the public's expectation that they be able to use public lands as intended.
All right, we're going to talk more about it when we come back. The interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com. 1245 at News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Yeah.
Inside Douglas County, 1247, Lars Larson at 1, Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show at 4. On tomorrow's program, we'll talk about the new Pathways Innovator position with Roseburg Public Schools and Umpqua Community College here on Inside Douglas County. Today, Roseburg Police Chief Gary Klopfenstein, City of Roseburg Manager Nikki Messenger, talking about the change in regulations for those that are unhoused. Chief, any estimate how many people are on the streets right now?
So we think it's about 150 right now, maybe a little over that.
So and has that number been fairly stagnant?
I think it's gone. Well, it's hard to tell. It's hard to tell if it's seasonal. It usually goes down a little bit in the wintertime. And after COVID, it was much higher. And so after COVID, it went down. So we're hopeful it'll keep going down as the Navigation Center opens and we're able to start connecting people to resources that they need.
So this went into effect fairly recently. Have you started giving out citations?
To my knowledge, I believe there's two so far have given out. I know the captain went out on Friday, and everyone he talked to and told them about the ordinance and presented them with the admonishment that they were going to be cited if they didn't move. They all up and moved. And so he got compliance, and we're really looking for compliance right now. It's not a punishment thing. We're trying to find compliance. We'd much rather have that than it be punitive. So.
And it's kind of a tricky situation. I mean, in terms of being allowed to camp at night, but not there during the day. So you're going to see a lot more folks probably just moving around throughout the community during the day, which may cause its own set of issues.
So back up here. You're not going to hear me say camping. Camping's still prohibited in our parks. We're going to say sleeping. We allow them to sleep at night with accommodations to keep them out of the weather. So camping still prohibited, but yes, we do anticipate that if they do follow that, there will be more people migrating around. But as Nikki said previously, the parks are open and they have a right to be in the park just like anybody else does.
So do you have folks that are actively going around, in the morning, for instance, checking out areas?
Staff.
Mm-hmm.
We have one homeless liaison officer and he is working his tail off. So he's doing the best he can. I don't have the staffing for that right now. So we're using this as a tool, tool to try to gain compliance and try to keep our parks as clean as we can. And we're going to do the best job we can, but we don't anticipate being able to do that for at least for a little while, where we could actually go on a big sweep every morning and make sure it's compliant. But we are going to try to find and engage those that are the most egregious and kind of work our way through that.
And Nikki, there are some areas in town where, you know, people are used to seeing folks that are spending the night there. One of the areas that maybe isn't as obvious is like Gaddis Park. And I know at times there's been a lot of folks there along the bike path and the park area. What kind of issues has that caused for other park users over there?
So a lot of issues around damage to the riverbanks, damage to the vegetation, impacts to residents around the river there, meaning across the river, just with illegal activities happening and impacting some of those folks that live across the river from there. And so the prohibition at all times, 24/7, is in that section between the I-5 area down towards Deer Creek is no tents, no anything like that between the bike path and the river. And a lot of that is just to hope that we can get the river healed back up, because not only does the activity do damage, us getting in there to clean up the garbage has done damage. So both of those kind of compound that situation.
And I know last year when we got into fall, and sometimes that, sometimes rainstorms come along fairly quickly, folks have been set up in a location. They may go elsewhere. They may come back and find it swept away, which means all of that is in the river system somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. It does lead to garbage in the river.
And has that been one of the things that's helped this process along, just sort of concern about the rivers?
So that's one of the things we were sensitive to and that really came through in the survey that people were concerned about.
So around the state, this has been an issue. I know you've talked to folks from other cities about this as well.
Yeah, every city's working on it. Every city's handling a little bit differently depending on what their circumstances are. But I constantly monitor. League of Oregon Cities has a website. And so I'm on there, you know, at least once a week looking at, there's articles from newspapers all over the state. And if there's something that's like, oh, this happened in Bend or this happened here or there, that I can go and kind of research what they're doing, what the consequences were, and make sure that we're not reinventing the wheel and we're not repeating somebody else's mistake.
Chief, what about the Duck Pond area? That one gets a lot of attention just with retail nearby and a lot of people out walking the pass system there. Have you seen a lot of issues over there?
Previously we have. I drove by it this morning and I didn't see very much at all there. That's going to be prohibited. That whole area is prohibited. So we're going to start, especially where it's the most visible, is probably going to get the most attention as we start to engage people and let them know, hey, you can't be here, and try to move them to or get them to move to other areas. So I anticipate it will remain. I hope it will remain kind of clean.
Now, has that been also a driver of some criminal activity along with folks just being set up there?
Yeah. Yeah. As Nikki said, there's the littering, criminal mischief, some vandalism, thefts. It follows the camps.
And what about other law enforcement folks in the state? When you talk to them, how are they dealing with this?
It's the first thing that comes up usually. It's the hot topic, and we're all looking at each other, seeing who's doing what right and who's doing something that didn't get themselves in legal trouble. And so we're all trying to find out what we can do and do as much as we can without getting ourselves in a legal bind.
And for the Navigation Center, how is that progressing?
So it's getting really close to the second phase of construction being complete. We expect the building to get turned over to UCAN probably by the end of August. So then there'll be a little bit of time to get the bed set up, get the furniture put together, and things like that. So we're thinking shortly after Labor Day, they should be able to start housing people on the congregate shelter side.
And how many people can they house there?
I believe the target is 30.
And is there a process there when somebody comes, just in terms of expectations and behaviors and things like that?
Yeah, they do have a list of rules that have to be followed. They have, I think they have to be in by 9. I'm not 100% sure on that. But they do have kind of a code of conduct that people have to follow while they're there. There's not a sobriety requirement to be able to be there, but it is drug and alcohol free while you're there. UCAN has established a list of conduct and rules that people have to follow to live at the Navigation Center.
And talk about the relationship with the city and ADAPT and addressing some of this.
So the ADAPT is working closely with UCAN at the Navigation Center. They participate, of course, Dr. Brigham's on our homeless commission. So it's been really helpful to gain their insight into some of the underlying issues that they're dealing with. Of course, they have the crisis intervention team that the chief's folks work with very, very closely. We're also partners in the Sobering Center that's been up and running for a little over a year now. And I believe they recently opened what they call a crisis room.
Like a respite center.
Yeah, something that allows them to have a place for people to be if there's not a bed in treatment available. But I don't want to speak for them, but there's a lot of good things that have happened through that partnership.
And if people want to look at the specifics of the locations and all of this involved with the new ordinance, is that up on the city website?
Yeah, so it's on the city website under the departments on the police department page under time, place, and manner maps. And we really just tried to show the prohibited places in the most common areas. So we're showing that the majority of the park system outside of neighborhood parks, right? Because it's prohibited 24/7 in residential areas.
All right. Nikki Messenger, Gary Klopfenstein, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
1257 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.